Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. We are recording February 16th, Wednesday, for publication the next day on the 17th, Thursday. And our theme this week is fast and furious, because that's how it's coming, fast and furious. Not just truckers, but everything. It's a tsunami of disinformation. The modified Hangout team and their 1,000 copywriters are out there in full force.
Boy, are they ever.
I know.
because it's a fast and furious, and it's just a hurricane of information. I'm going to have to make a couple of detours as we go from stuff that I was picking up last night and this morning that we didn't talk about yesterday. It's very interesting.
Well, but it's interesting. After, you know, all week long we're sending each other stories, but if you just clear out all the noise, you come down to a couple of very important key things. And I keep going back and seeing state of our currency, going direct reset, CBDC, which is now about to mail from the printer, so everybody's about to get it, and the vaccine passports with it. You just keep going. And then if you look at the news from the vantage point of the important control grid points and the important freedom points, it's in one sense, it's simple and clear.
It's very clear.
Right.
Right. Especially the loss of freedom in the this week, and the rise of just the mask is coming off the tyrants.
Right. Well, I don't know if you've ever been in Texas when they're playing chicken. You know, you get these cars going at each other at high speed, and the question is who's going to swerve first.
Right.
And it's kind of like watching a big old Texas game of chicken.
It is. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not swerving.
I'm not swerving.
Yeah, I dare you.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready to dive in?
Let's go.
Because we got a lot to cover this week. Let me get rid of this window here. Okay. The first story we got this week is Farmageddon.
Uh-huh.
It's called basically Pfizer delayed. So the story here is that FDA has postponed a meeting on COVID shots for kids under five. So it's toddlers up to 4 years old. After Pfizer says there's not enough data, and the vendor asked people don't let up. The story is Pfizer today said it will delay applying for emergency use authorization of its COVID vaccine for infants and children 6 months to 4 years old. So it's actually younger than toddlers, stating that there's not enough data on the efficacy of a third dose. Interestingly, CNBC last month reported two shots did not induce an adequate immune response in children 2 to 4 years old in Pfizer's clinical trials. Okay, so there's two shots isn't enough. So what does Fauci say? Well, they're going to need three doses then.
Right.
Incredible. And what the New York Times described as a highly unusual move, the FDA urged Pfizer to apply for EUA of the vaccine, even though two doses failed to produce the hoped-for immune response among children 2 to 4 years old, and the vaccine maker did not yet have data on the efficacy of a third shot. That's unbelievable.
So my understanding is they wanted this approval so that they would continue to have indemnification on a fully approved vaccine for adults. We described that last week. But my understanding is this is a temporary pullback. They'll be back. Their package really wasn't ready. In the meantime, I just watched a video of an FDA executive describing what's really going on. I don't know if you've seen it, but
I just saw it, and that's one that I could cut to. But I've already got three more cut tos in the show.
I know, but that's what happens when it comes fast and furious. But we can describe it, and we'll have it up on the website. The reality is, everyone in that process knows they don't yet have any data to support that this vaccine is efficient and safe. They can't even prove it's a vaccination, and they're not even disclosing this thing is so cobbled together, it's falling apart.
The video is of a Pfizer executive. It's a secret cam. It's done by Project Veritas. They're in a restaurant. The camera's set on the table, like in the water glass of someone, and it shot up of him, and he's saying, oh, President Biden's coming. He's going to vaccinate everybody. We got to vaccinate toddlers. And the questioner is saying, is it really safe? And he's like, well, yeah, there's not enough data, and I've got some hesitation about it, but we're just going to roll forward because it gives people, I love this, the guys, this is a total illiterate guy. It gives people more assurity if the company is confident. Anyway. Anyway, that was the video. But we'll see that in the next Money Market. I've already got it in the video pool for the March 3rd.
For next week. Okay.
Well, for March 3rd, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, let's keep it rolling. A lot to cover. The next story you and I talked about, this is kind of a crazy story. How much Moderna stock has Stefan Bonsall owns and why he just sold $1.8 million of it? We initially thought it was $1.8 billion. It is not. It is still interesting, though. On February 11th, the CEO of Moderna sold 10,000 shares of company stock valued at $1.8 million total. By the following day, his Twitter account had disappeared without warning. The Twitter observers found the relationship between these moves suspicious, but in reality, the sale was part of Bonsall's previously made plans to sell stock over time. Okay? So Rule 10b-5 of the SEC Act of 1934 allows company insiders to sell shares at predetermined times. It's a way for executives to avoid appearances and accusations of illegal insider trading. Okay, fair enough. But get this. Between January and August of 2020, Bonsall sold $38 million worth of stock. These sales came in the midst of positive announcements about Moderna's development of a COVID-19 vaccine and the progress of vaccine trials. So he's selling stock on positive company news. It's like, well, how's that not insider trading? Well, because NPR reporting found that on several occasions, Bonsall and others simply amended their 10b5-1 plans just before the stock moving announcements. So that's unbelievable. If you want to avoid charges of insider trading, just change your plan and go ahead and insider trade.
So remember the chairman, so Bonsall's the president, the chairman also sold stock. And what was interesting is if you take the stories from Yahoo Finance and you post them, it converts to billion. So 1.8 billion just for the European protocols. So it can be very tricky. But the thing that's remarkable about this is if you look at the timing vis-a-vis the Twitter account, I'll make you a bet. Okay. So this is a wild ass bet, but I will bet you there was a discussion of indemnification issues with the company's attorneys and the E&O insurer. I don't know who the E&O insurer to the board is on Moderna, but I would love to know. And I'll bet you part of that money is going to fund his own independent counsel. They told him he has to get independent counsel. The company's counsel can no longer represent him individually or the chairman. So they cashed out a chunk of change because now they're going to have to hire their own independent counsel.
Wow.
That's my bet. I think this whole thing is being driven by insurance and the interaction of the insurance companies behind the scenes. And they're nervous. I mean, you notice Pfizer changed its SEC disclosure. So you got the lawyers in there, whether it's the lawyers for the error and omissions insurers, or it's the lawyers related to the SEC disclosure, or the lawyers related to a variety of different company liability and insurance of that. So the attorneys are taking over.
They are. And that cuts to our next story, which is it's a video from this guy named Dowd, former BlackRock executive, who's talking about some of these issues. Right. Listen to this. This is incredible. Here we go.
The FDA and Pfizer don't release the data on the clinical trials. I'm assuming fraud. What we're seeing from the incidences of deaths and disabilities from these vaccines, you know, people have been debating about the VAERS database, but now the actuarial insurance companies are seeing it in their results. One America released 40% increase in all-cause mortality, not related to COVID. A little report that went under the radar, Aegon Insurance in their third quarter results, and this is a Reuters article, said that their U.S. unit saw an increase in death claims from 31 million in 2020 Q3 to 111 million in Q3 of 2021. That's a 268-some-odd% increase. It's shocking. Pfizer got blanket immunity from liability with the EUA. If fraud occurred, which to my mind and what I'm seeing from their refusal to release the data, if there is fraud and it comes out and we need whistleblowers and it's looking more and more apparent that this product is deadly, fraud eviscerates all contracts. That's case law. So you go down the daisy chain That's liability. That's bankruptcy for Moderna, definitely Pfizer. I mean, this is the most interesting, you know, hallucination I've ever seen in the financial markets. And it's not just, look, if I'm right, and I believe I am, this is just not fraud that where people are going to lose money. People are losing their lives and all disability going along with this. And the bottom line is this. The FDA is the trusted third party, just like the rating agencies were. And a lot of doctors in this country, a lot of local governments are placing their trust in the FDA, which gets 50% of its budget from large cap pharma. It wasn't any one person. I think it was just like, oh, we got to get this approved. And I think they overlooked things. They didn't. An all-cause mortality endpoint should have stopped this thing in its tracks, and it didn't.
Wow.
So I think Dowd is, he thinks the fraud started lower down than I do. But if you look at the pathology reports that have come out, it's clear there was fraud. And I think the insurance companies have heard that, you know, the results of the pathology reports. One of the areas we're seeing a lot of disinformation is suddenly in pathology. And you realize, oh, I think they want to muddle this up. But I wanted to mention the Doctors for COVID Ethics are having a symposium on Friday. They're going over the pathology reports again. And Dr. Mark Skidmore is presenting his paper on all-cause mortality and in the United States and the relationship to the injections. And it is a blockbuster.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But interesting, he's saying, you know, it's not just the companies are going down. They're both of them. Twin Towers are coming down. This is fraud, not just wiping out people's money. This is killing people.
Right.
To hear a former BlackRock executive speak in that language is just breathtaking.
Well, two interesting points. Skidmore for the United States did a random sample. Based on that sample, he argues that and I think he's being extremely conservative, that the COVID-19 injections have killed 260,000 to 300,000 people. Now, if you, and then a million plus adverse events that are serious. So if you look at that number, so it's 1.5 million of what often translates into family bankruptcies. So it's not just 1.5 million people who've been harmed or killed. It's 1.5 million families who've been devastated financially, if not bankrupted. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, boy,
and
is that ever a lot of
the,
people.
Right, that's just the United States.
Yeah, exactly. That's a drop in a bucket.
Right, right. Anyway, okay.
Shifting gears over to FedWatch. First story, rather interesting, out of France. French money factory up in flames. Let me zoom into this. Read it. More than 30 people have been injured and hundreds evacuated from a burning money printing plant. In France, it took emergency services 3 hours to extinguish the blaze. That is quite the blaze there. But I saw this. I was like, well, what caught fire? You know, what's going on? Operated by the Central Bank of France, the factory is one of 11 high-security printing works in Europe that produce euro banknotes. So it's not, you know, it's euro banknotes. It's not national banknotes, obviously, because France no longer... French francs.
Yeah, but it's going to make euros. It harder to get cash. And the European Union have been pushing hard to get it to 100% digital.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But every country would have a printing plant, I would imagine.
Not every, but you have 11 printing plants and they'd be all spread around and they're authorized. Yeah. The different central banks are authorized to print a certain amount of euro notes. So it's, I don't know what the excuse is going to be, but they're doing everything they can to encourage people to go digital.
Yeah, 30 injured people in a plant. That's a lot for a fire that breaks out.
Right, because those facilities have extraordinary fire security.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
They have the early warning systems in a plant of that nature, any kind of paper plant. It's just they're advanced and sophisticated. So 30 people... being, you know, injured like that is just kind of a, you think it through, that's a lot of people.
Right. It's probably smoke inhalation, but it still shouldn't happen. Right. It shouldn't happen.
No, and the story points out, they said, well, no chemicals were involved. Okay, well, if no chemicals were involved, it sounds like it was paper then. But,
right.
You know, I don't know. Anyway, let's keep it going. This next story out of Australia. Australia's new digital identity system would give tyrannical politicians total control. Here we go. There's a bill pending in Australia. The proposed bill to have a digital identity system, which is to apply to everyone, is necessary, they say, because effective governance of the system is essential to the efficient operation of and instilling public trust and confidence in the system. We got to have that confidence. Problem is, the Australian government has lost all credibility. Indeed, it has. Digital systems can allow total control over everything a citizen does. In the first instance, it would include healthcare and extend the use of the already appalling COVID-19 digital certificates that are needed to go into venues and most workplaces. And here I want to cut over to a document that I just came across in the World Economic Forum. Here you go.
Yep,
this is,
here they are.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, these, so if you look at this document, it is from 2018.
Right.
But here it is. Here it is. It's, so they control everything with your digital identity. They have that at the center. So they control healthcare, financial services, food, travel, everything. Everything
yeah.
you want to do.
Yeah.
So in other words,
total
the World Economic
control.
Forum.
Right.
You and I, you know, we don't spend too much time talking about the World Economic Forum, but the more I read about it, doing this program with you, I'm starting to get the idea that the World Economic Forum really is sort of the boot or the boot heel camp of the world leaders, like Trudeau.
Right, but I would say it's the marketing arm. In other words, the central bankers are not going to market the going direct reset. So they need an organization that's going to sort of make it look young, fashionable, innovative, and market it. You know, and that's the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
So there, yeah, so you know, you have the modified hangout team running around saying this is all being run from the World Economic Forum, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But they are
right.
They are sort of the knowledge manager for the marketing arm.
The implementer.
You know, not the even the down. Implementer, but.
Well.
It's like a knowledge manager and marketing arm. So, and
there's a reason.
They're definitely coordinating between people on the oversight.
To me, there's a reason that Macron and Trudeau and CERN, whatever name, they all sound the same.
Right. Think of them as the global copywriting team.
Yeah.
Right.
That's literally what it is.
Right.
But that plan, that diagram from the World Economic Forum from 2018, now 4 years later, you're seeing it implemented in Australia.
Right. And Australia is one of the most important prototypers in the system. When you see Australia roll out, even though it's a tiny country, if you look at the leadership, it's very smart, very tight-knit, very organized, and very plugged in globally. And so it's a very important place. And if the Australians roll out their proposed crypto regulation, to me, that's extremely important because that says, okay, this is a serious, you know, example of where they want to go globally. So it's the same with this. If they're doing this complete digital identity system, it's a real example of what they want to do globally. So pay attention to Australia. Australia is the Judas goat.
Is the what?
Judas
Come
goat.
Again?
You know
What's
who
that?
The Judas goat is?
No.
When you lead the sheep into the slaughterhouse, you have one who's designed to lead them in, and then he circles around, he stays alive, and the other go into the slaughterhouse. That's what the modified hangout team does. They lead them. So I showed you Bob Moran is the wonderful cartoonist who got fired from the Telegraph. I showed you his wonderful cartoon this week with the media spewing out fear and everybody grabbing for the life preserve, and it says on the life preserve, slavery.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, let's keep it going. Let's cut over to inflation now. Accelerates This is a Wall Street Journal story, but, you know.
I'm shocked to find out that inflation is going on here.
Yeah, it accelerates to 7.5%, supposedly. I'm going to scroll down to this one. Let me recenter that.
So what do you think the real rate of inflation is if they're admitting to 7.5?
That's another cutover. This thing. Anyway, let me just see if I can spot some of these. They talk about various, okay, so here I'm going to, I had highlights on this, but my virus has eaten a lot of stuff. Food prices surged 7%. Okay. Energy prices, 27%. And later on in this article, some people are talking about going to rent an apartment. And she said, we were looking at the same apartment. It was, you know, $2,400 a month 6 months ago. And now it is $3,000 a month. A few months ago, it was $2,400. And those are the sort of the price increases we're talking about. I want to cut, right, though, to a report from the BLS, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. And there's a table in this report. And what this is, the producer price index. Table B, monthly and 12-month percent changes in selected intermediate demand. Intermediate demand means not input goods, but sort of processed, right, goods that are going to a business that is going to then produce an end good, a consumer, right, good. Look at these numbers here. Total change. This is processed goods for intermediate. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Look at this trend line.
Right.
Here. All right. So you really see here 23, 23, 23 from June, July, August, September up to now, 24. No sign of receding. And then you look at the unprocessed goods. Look at these numbers. They're even worse.
Right. Right.
Going up 50, and again, there's no sign of receding there at all, right?
Right?
So inflation is on. I was in the grocery store yesterday. White onions have been 99 cents since the dawn of time per pound, and now they're $1.29. It's 30%. Bam.
Right, right.
So 7.5%, that's a fantasy. That's not accurate at all.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any...
Well, you know, it's we always knew it was going to get much worse, but I don't think we, you know, the inflation story has just begun as far as I'm concerned. And the, yeah, the big question in my mind is, what is the all-cause mortality rise figures and will that offset?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I don't know.
No, it's an ugly picture, but that's, you know, if you look at what we can expect, those are the two variables that are going to drive whether or not we get very significant inflation or it's tempered by the changes in the population.
All right. Well, let's go to the next story. There is no surprise here. The Bank of Japan announces plan to buy an unlimited amount of 10-year bonds at 0.25%. That's really the sum total of the story. It said on Thursday that it's going to buy an unlimited amount of 10-year Japanese bond at a quarter of a point. What do you make of that?
So this, remember, if you do a survey of the countries in the world that have the most debt outstanding and the most leverage, Japan is number one. So this is really a exercise in how much can you lever a economy that's tightly controlled financially by the central bank. And the answer, right, is nobody knows, but we are headed into the stratosphere with this announcement. It's like my mother used to say, Katie, bar the door. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is pretty amazing.
It is. Yeah. An unlimited amount.
Yeah, there is no end to this bubble. And in fact, right, I don't know if you remember, we covered that bubble story last week or the week before. And the author's conclusion, I agree with him, is the number one bubble is Japan.
Right. Well, you know, the question is, okay, well, who are you going to buy them from?
Right.
And the answer is, you know, if it's unlimited, you're buying them from everybody. You're buying them from banks and non-banks.
Right.
Which means that retail money supply is going through the roof right along with reserves.
Right.
So right. If you saw that chart on inflation, that's like the opening gambit, if you think, right, about it. Yeah.
Right. And that's before they come up with their $150 trillion climate change investment plan.
God forbid. Okay, let's just go to the next story on that happy note. Major breakthrough on nuclear fusion energy. There's really not a lot here other than, you know, just a lot of hype. Like, hey, we've got this new breakthrough, right? So they say here in the story, oh, UK Jet Labs, it broke its own world record. And then you get down and you look at this further in the story. They say this is more than what was double achieved in similar tests back in 1997. And it's like, oh, wow, you doubled something in the space of, you know, 25 years? That's not really that impressive, is it?
So here's the thing. The reason I wanted us to cover this story is every time you start to see real fragility and exploding leverage in the financial system and inflation starting to rise, immediately you get these stories that say, energy breakthrough, you know, with the promise of very cheap breakthrough energy.
Right.
And it's like a bell, and the bell says, okay, they're worried about inflation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not real. It's just
Right. It's another story that says, nothing to worry about. Stay on your couch.
Right.
Okay. The white hats are winning, whoever they are. They might be scientists. They might be politicians. They got your vest. Just relax. Just stay seated.
We are the establishment, and we have this covered.
We got it. Don't worry about it.
We can double productivity overnight like that. Here we go.
Yeah. It's coming any day now. Okay. Let's go to – still on cut to China. It's kind of like Japan. China quietly injects $1 trillion in the biggest monthly credit surge on record. The problem here is, it's a surge, but if you look at this graph, it's like, well, this has been going on for a while, hasn't it?
Right.
I mean,
the other thing is the Fed ongoing directed more than $1 trillion in a month.
This is 2011 in this graph. So this is 10 years, right?
Right.
So this pattern has been going on for a while, this injection of credit. So I don't really know what to make of this story when I see stuff like that. It's like another hype story, really.
Well,
yeah, no doubt they're injecting money, but they've been doing it for a while.
Well, they're injecting money and burning cash. That's what we can
go away looking at it. Exactly.
Yeah.
But they've been doing, you know, interestingly, this is the injections obviously started with the global financial crisis. That's what's clear, you know, as time goes on, that global financial crisis and the bailouts was a real turning point.
Right.
For everybody. Not just in the U.S. And we talked about that in sovereignty. It's like, you know, that was a real turning point in the U.S. Okay, let's keep it going. This story was from Zero Hedge, I think. But Zero Hedge was pop-ups were driving me crazy. So I'm going to the SGT site. I know that you've talked to Sean before. He's a good guy. Nebraska joins call for a convention of states to amend the U.S. Constitution.
This is very bad news. Very bad news.
The significance here, the two things to look at are it's the 17th state, right? And if you go down, it's the 17th state to say this. And I think if you go down, they need, 27?
Yep.
Here we go. It's right here. It needs 3/4 of the state. Since the U.S. Constitution was adopted, 27 amendments have been made. So they need 3/4 of the states.
Right.
So that's 37 and a half, 38. But they're on their way with 17.
Well, there are two ways to do it. You know, Congress can adopt a specific amendment and set it around for approval, which is the safe way because then you know what you're approving. If you get the states to have a constitutional convention, you can open it up and then they can drive a truck through. Edwin Vieira joined me on the Salary Report in 2017 to do a great interview on why a constitutional convention is the worst idea yet. And it's going to be the blast from the past next week, so we'll recycle it and bring it up. It's public. I made it public because it's such an important policy decision. But if you want to get rid of the Second Amendment and if you want to seize everybody's assets, if you want to keep the $21 trillion you've stolen, this is how you do it. You just tear up that Constitution. And that's why every time an activist says the old system is hopeless, let's just walk away and start fresh, I'm like, oh, no, because what I hear is they get to keep the $21 trillion and then they get to stick all the liabilities to you and seize all your assets.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Right.
Right.
Right. That's a dangerous game to play.
Right.
Right. To let them run hog wild.
Right. And to pull in all the guns. They can just take all the guns.
You know, remember we talked about sovereignty. Obama comes into office and his first thing is, oh, we want to look forward, not back.
Right.
You know, we need to create new laws and not use those old laws.
Right.
And like, no, 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 pal, that's not what we need at all.
Right.
You know.
Right. They were so hot and heavy, that whole group on gun control. They just wanted to pull in all the guns. They tried like crazy.
Well, and they just couldn't get. On the other hand, the best gun salesman in the history of the U.S. has been Barack Obama.
That's true.
Okay, let's cut over to one of my favorite people, Katie Couric. Misinformation super spreader should be held liable. Okay. Get into it. In a new interview, Couric, the former host of Today and CBS Evening News, called for an escalation of enforcement against misinformation super spreaders. You know, I just want to say real quick, you know, notice how they're supposed to be about science, all this vaccination. They use language like super spreaders, obviously not scientific, since you're using it here in a political context. But let's keep it going anyway. People who spread it, she says, who are super spreaders should be held liable for spreading disinformation, whether it's about COVID or vaccines or about Sandy Hook, she told Yahoo Finance editor-in-chief so-and-so on January 11th. That's just astonishing that the gloves have just come off with the censorship.
Yep.
You know, and that's really it on that story. And you're seeing this more and more where the mask, you know, is being ripped off the face of these people as they just take the gloves off and say, you know, we're just going to take your money.
Right.
You know, take your freedoms, take your right to free expression.
Right. So this is the Ministry of Truth. And what we saw is the Canadian government basically say, you know, we can take money out of your bank account without a court order, without evidence, without proof. And we can use your taxpayer resources to indemnify the banks from any liability or harm when they help us do that. It's just a steal. Now, interestingly enough, I sent this to you last night. The Toronto Sun came out with an editorial and said, Trudeau has gone too far. This is not acceptable. It wasn't necessary. And the whole thing turned into a mess because he mishandled it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, right. For a mainstream publication to call that, call it out is really like something's changing.
Yeah, well, what it tells me is he did that without having the establishment on board behind him. That's what it looks like.
Or the Toronto Sun's not really part of the establishment anymore.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, the pecking order's changed. I don't know.
It could be.
But I want to cut to a clip. This is a clip we talked about and you know about, but this is chilling. Concerns, you know, free expression online and what the police are doing. So let's just take a look. This is from, I believe, Canada. Here we go.
Sorry, since you're at my home, can I just get your name and your badge number, please?
I have a card here.
Okay.
It's Erica Ingram.
Thank you.
And this is just some information about peaceful protests. That's all it is.
Okay, so you saw something on my Facebook?
No, on the Facebook group.
Okay. And decided to come to my personal residence to give me information about peaceful protest?
Yes.
Okay, so are the Peterborough police... No, you're with OPP? Are you guys now monitoring people's Facebook pages or Facebook groups to who comments as to what their status updates are or what they're doing or within the group?
Just like, because of the protests happening province-wide, yes, we have been monitoring the protests.
Okay.
So there's a protest coming up. I'm simply providing you with information about a peaceful protest, and now I'm leaving.
Oh, okay.
That is all.
So the Ontario Provincial Police are watching what people are doing on Facebook in different groups, whether or not they're commenting, participating, liking, and you guys are now doing service calls to give people information about peaceful protest.
Yeah, it's just a proactive measure to make sure you understand your rights about peaceful protest.
I have a copy of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, so I'm well within that and very understanding of that. I appreciate that. I'm hoping that you guys aren't going to waste our tax dollars continuing to do this to everybody, but now it's nice to know that we're being watched. So,
if you have any questions, my cell phone number is on the card.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just monitoring your group, and we know who you are, and we come to your house, and we know where you live. Are you kidding? Oh, that's kind of ham-fisted, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Anyway. No. you know, having lived through 11 years of fisticuffing with the Department of Justice, it can get much uglier than that.
Yeah, right. But you know, notice it's Facebook.
Right.
You know, Facebook, Facebook, Facebook.
Right.
You know, that's funny. It's always Facebook, you know.
You know, but here's the thing. I keep having the most intelligent, capable people tell me they're still on Facebook. And I can't, you know, you just got to leave.
Yeah, right.
Or understand this is going to be happening to you. I mean, and, you know, we use social media. I use social media. So I know, you know, I understand that it's being monitored. Everything is being monitored. But yeah. Facebook?
All of these big companies, you know, in all of these big crowdfunding, any sort of big institution, the notion that Mark Zuckerberg is like the Superman who just created this company by himself without the assistance of, say, the intelligence agencies,
right,
or the CIA, the NSA, it's just ludicrous.
Right.
You know, these things, these are extensions of the government, and you're seeing it. What right. happens as a result of it? The police are watching you. They're watching what you say, and they're coming to your house.
Well, the 17 intelligence agencies in the United States are keeping a file on every global citizen in the world, okay?
Yeah.
And the beauty, the cost effectiveness of the system is they're getting the global citizens to update their file on them. So everybody updates the file that they maintain, and it's remarkably efficient. It's very economic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And all that information is going to go back into that circular grid, whatever we saw from the World Economic Forum,
right.
the social control system.
Yeah.
You know, to control everything. Anyway.
It's a control grid, and it's happening to you one person at a time, and you have the ability to not feed it.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. Just don't participate.
Right.
Just stop participating.
Well, right.
Anyway, okay, let's keep it moving to climate change, which you brought up earlier. This is, anyway, USDA supports climate smart commodities with $1 billion investment. USDA will be investing $1 billion to help expand market opportunities for climate-smart agricultural products. Climate-smart agricultural products? What's that? A climate-smart commodity is considered an agricultural product that is produced using practices which sequester carbon or reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Applicable practices include cover cropping, manure management, and enhanced efficiency fertilizers, soil amendments such as biochar, and nutrient management. So, in other words, all of these things, whether they're climate smart, I'm sure is determined by some, you know, magnanimous committee that would never, ever go pick out its crony friends to decide whether they comply and they making climate smart products, but not their competitors who are smaller.
So the printing machine, you know, modern monetary theory is over here. Money is no object. We can spend $150 trillion on climate change. Over here, there's no money, and we just have to cut back. Do you know what I mean? And the two worlds seem to coexist, and the spin goes both ways. And you think, you know, the multiple personality disorder can't get worse, and then it does. And climate change is going to be the next bubble that they blow. And it's, you know, just when you think that the central banks can't print more money, their biggest print is coming up.
Yeah. Well, MMT, you know, they the double entry accounting, they get right. The double entry bookkeeping, they got that right. Where they go wrong is they say, well, all debt is money. Don't worry about the debt. It's the same as money. It's like, no, it isn't the same as money. You can't pay off debt with more debt. There's a thing called legal tender. But they never talk about that because they want to make these things like, oh, it's just totally normal to have a $30 trillion debt. It isn't. And they want to make you think it's innocuous. It isn't. But it's a very pernicious theory of monetary thought.
Anyway. I know when they start seizing your assets to pay off the liabilities, you'll discover that debt matters.
that there is a difference between debt and money.
Right.
And you have a lot of the former and none of the latter.
Right.
It's not good for you. Okay. Keep it going. This is interesting. Something isn't right. 38 lawmakers demand Biden undergo cognitive testing as soon as possible. This is interesting because it's from this Republican representative, Dr. Ronny Jackson. He warns that President Biden's mental decline and forgetfulness have become more apparent over the past 2 years and urges the 79-year-old to take a cognitive aptitude test, just as former President Trump did. And he says, "I, as a former physician to three presidents of the United States, which I didn't know, I know what it takes mentally and physically to execute the duties of commander-in-chief and head of state," said Jackson, who served as a White House doctor to former Presidents George W. Bush, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump. And now he's saying it's time for Biden to get a cognitive test. Wow. I just didn't know the guy was a representative.
I think Biden is, you know, sort of the reason he won't take the test, he's going to flunk.
Oh, yeah.
He can't pass the test.
The clips are getting worse and worse of him.
Right.
Just the gibberish that spews forth, like, whoa. And the other big tell is the White House staff is so protective. Like, you got to leave now. Like, you know, it's obviously
it's kinda,
the guys.
It's scary. And, you know, one of the things it shows, given the performance of the U.S. dollar, is whoever's running the Treasury and the dollar is not coming out of the White House.
Right. Right. Whoever is running the Treasury and the dollar is not from the U.S. government. It's from a private bank called the New York Fed.
Right.
Correct. Right. Yep. Okay, let's keep it going back to the Biden White House. Here we go. This article from Great Media. Biden administration urges court not to allow release of secret report on Dominion voting machines. Biden administration urging the court not to allow the release of a secret report on the Dominion voting machines. A so-called computer glitch in the voting machines flipping votes during the 2020 elections has caused a major controversy. Giant Media found out that vendors and not hackers may be behind the rigging. Interesting. Vendors and not hackers. One of the vendors, a Denver-based Canadian Crown agent company, Dominion Voting Systems, has a long history of allegations of election rigging and interference in elections of various nations, including census data theft in India and interference in the U.S. election of 2020. According to the witness affidavit of a high-ranking military officer, the Smartmatic voting machines were specifically designed to steal U.S. elections in a way that the system could change the vote of each voter without being detected in order to steal U.S. elections. That's just amazing, isn't it?
Some of the noise this week about going after disinformation spreaders is really focused on allegations related to election fraud. So the sensitivity in this administration on this is very significant.
It is. You know, I mean, I hear the election stuff going on and on and on. You know, there's a lot. It's a flood of information. But when the White House steps in and starts to do this, it's like, whoa, what are you worried about?
Everybody's on thin ice on this one. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and if you look at the efforts to publicize what has happened in different states, you could still get a real blow up here before the November elections.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. That's a story to keep your eye on. I mean, the involvement of the White House in that, sort of saying going to court. I mean, you two branches of government going at it, Article 2 versus Article 3, like don't lead to the Senate report. That's kind of it sort of entered the domain of being real to me.
Right.
Like that could blow up.
I mean,
Article 3 court, you know, those judges, they're independent.
Right.
And granted, a lot of them, you question how independent they are. But there's 850 members of the federal judiciary. They draw the wrong straw. That could get real ugly real fast. Now,
right.
Anyway. Okay. Let's keep it going. This Freedom Convoy bank freezes Freedom Convoy donations. This is a watershed event.
Yes.
Big time.
Yes.
Wow. Let's look at it.
Yes.
Bank freezes Freedom Convoy donations. Toronto Dominion Bank, TD, has announced that it will not be handing over $1.4 million in donations to the Freedom Convoy and is planning to surrender the money to the Ontario Superior Court of Justice instead. The bank said it was applying to entrust funds with authorities in the hope that they may be managed and distributed in accordance with the intentions of the donors. Obviously false, because the donors wanted the money to go to the convoy, right? What are you talking about?
So Keep going. I'll bring it up in a second.
So we're going to try to get it to the donors and or to be returned to the donors who have requested refunds, but whose entitlement to a refund cannot be determined by TD. The truckers switched to a Christian fundraising platform, GiveSendGo, shortly afterwards. However, the Ontario Superior Court announced on Thursday that it would be freezing funds from GiveSendGo accounts, too. The court sided with Ontario's Attorney General, who claimed the money would be further used to further a criminal act, and now the truckers are turning to cryptocurrencies. And that's just so chilling. The banks and the government are in cahoots. That's fascism right there. You just saw it. Private banks in bed with the government to suppress freedom. You have to be kidding.
So first you have this huge game around to GoFundMe, where GoFundMe says they're going to require donors to put in a request for a refund before they refund their money, at which point you get a huge brouhaha, including Santa's getting involved. And so then they say, okay, they're going to refund the money. Then you have them go to GiveSendGo, and now they're saying, you know, that GiveSendGo has been interfered with, although the truckers came out and said there was no interference at GiveSendGo. So there's a real controversy about exactly what really is going on at GiveSendGo. But then you have TD, the Toronto Dominion Bank, interceding. Now, it gets even worse because, and I go back to the life preserve with slavery on it, the whole modified hangout team has just rushed in and said, oh, crypto is the answer. If we all just go to crypto, we'll be fine. And the reality is there is no solution in the digital space.
Exactly.
And the idea that somehow if you go to crypto, you're going to somehow be free of the constrictions of the digital space is absurd.
And we're going to see how that's going to come up in a minute. But first, I want to cut to just to follow up on the TD story.
Right. Okay?
Is the Freeland video, okay, from Canada on the same point. Here we go. Let's just cut right to that video and get it going.
The government is issuing an order with immediate effect under the Emergencies Act, authorizing Canadian financial institutions to temporarily cease providing financial services where the institution suspects that an account is being used to further the illegal blockades and occupations. This order covers both personal and corporate accounts. Third, we are directing Canadian financial institutions to review their relationships with anyone involved in the illegal blockades and report to the RCMP or CSIS. As of today, a bank or other financial service provider will be able to immediately freeze or suspend an account without a court order. In doing so, they will be protected against civil liability for actions taken in good faith. Federal government institutions will have a new broad authority to share relevant information with banks and other financial service providers to ensure that we can all work together to put a stop to the funding of these illegal blockades.
Oh, there you go. Total tyranny. So in other words, if you give $25 to the truckers, it's not just we're going to block the money from getting there. If you give the money to them, we'll shut down your account. We'll shut down your business account. We'll take everything you got, and there's no legal remedy whatsoever. They can do it with total impunity. That's
right. And they can
do
it without evidence or proving. They can do it on a rumor. In other words, if we think you might, we can just take it.
It's not just tyranny.
This isn't tyranny. This is Animal Farm.
Yeah.
You know, even tyranny has a process. This is Animal Farm, and this is chaos.
Yeah,
so,
this is just outright criminality at the top.
Right. What they're saying is you can't blame the government because the bank's doing it, but the bank is completely indemnified using taxpayer resources.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And you don't need the courts. The courts can't get involved because the government and the banks can do this without the court involvement. I mean, it's, you know, this is tearing up the Constitution. And, you know, the problem is I can see why somebody would think, okay, let's go to Bitcoin. That's an answer. The reality is anything digital is not an answer. You've got to find a way to go physical and start to build transaction networks that don't involve right. whether it's banks or the internet or, you know, Facebook or, you know, yeah. you got to get out of the internet and out of the digital space and back into physical.
Right. And we're going to see right. that when we get into the crypto stories. Right. They've tipped their hand this week and like, okay, well, how are they going to control crypto? You're going to see it. We've been alluding to it. But right. again, now the gloves are off. Fast and furious again. But first we want to go to space military and global turf wars. This is kind of, this is from straight out of Argentina. This is a really interesting story. Trapped in IMF debt, Argentina turns to Russia and joins China's Belt and Road Initiative. Argentina is trapped in a $44 billion of IMF's odious debt taken on by corrupt right-wing regimes. Seeking alternatives to U.S. hegemony, President Alberto Fernandez traveled to Russia and China, forming an alliance with the Eurasian powers, joining the Belt and Road Initiative. Fernandez signed a series of strategic agreements, officially incorporating Argentina into Beijing's International Belt and Road Initiative while expanding economic partnerships with the Eurasian powers and telling Moscow that Argentina should be the door to enter Latin America. Wow. China offered $23.7 billion of funding.
Take a look at a map. You have Argentina and Chile basically are the two doors into Antarctica, and now Russia and China have one, and the U.S. has the other.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's good. So the next story in Global Turf Wars is, this is an interesting story because it cuts right to one of the topics we talked about in sovereignty, which is the Westphalian principles. Let's go to this story. It concerns U.S. and Denmark. U.S.-Denmark military deal affects Danish national sovereignty. Indeed, it does. The deal allows Denmark to receive American troops in its territory. I love this. Here you go. Without any control of quantity, which right. has generated contrary opinions, criticism, and controversy as it directly affects the sovereignty of the Danish state. Pressured by tensions in Ukraine, Denmark is deciding to completely abdicate its military sovereignty, allowing American troops to occupy all of its national territory, using local military bases, allocating new equipment, and carrying out all type of activity deemed necessary by the U.S. without any request for authorization by any prior notice to the Danish authorities. The only limit is basically nuclear. How about that?
So one of the little factoids behind this is when the Danes first tried to introduce vaccine mandates, and Mads Pavlik was the politician who beat it back with the pots and pans strategy that they had used at Iceland. They were proposing in the legislation that those vaccine mandates could be enforced by foreign military brought in just for that purpose. Okay?
Yeah.
So now you have the foreign military authorized to go in, you know, without limit right. to size. And right. now you're talking about building the enforcement structure on whatever mandate you want. And the problem with the total control grid is once that mechanism in place, the mandates will be unending and unceasing and much worse than just vaccine mandates.
Right.
But now you have foreign military enforcement.
Yeah. That's really, it's really sad to, Denmark being a colony of the United States, really a colony of the corporate state, the banking state, you know, they've just surrendered all their sovereignty.
So I had an experience in 2019. I was in Denmark. I was in Copenhagen, and I started to be followed. And a long story short, I decided to get out. I just got out left a day early, changed my flight and got out because it was such an unpleasant experience. And it was clear to me, whoever was doing it, they were reporting to NATO. It was a NATO operation. And it just, Denmark felt like a captive state. It was horrible.
Yeah. That I imagine that's horrible, being followed. That's a terrible.
Oh no,
terrible
I'm used to being followed. I'll tell you the funny thing about it, because we were in the National Museum and the person trying to follow us was kind of a training op. They were young and inexperienced. And we kept doubling back because we were trying to find certain things in the museum and weren't sure where they were. And it just scrambled them. And I wish I had done it. I almost asked them to invite them to join us so that they wouldn't be so uncomfortable and it wouldn't be so embarrassing for them, you know, because they tripped up and bumped to us a bunch of times. But anyway, I have never seen The Little Mermaid. In all my life, I wanted to see The Little Mermaid. And I left a day early because I realized, you know, if I go see The Little Mermaid, they're going to follow me.
Yeah.
And it's not the same with NATO on your tail. Do you know what I mean?
They're going to ruin it. Yeah, right.
They're going to ruin it. And I love The Little Mermaid, and I'm not going to let NATO ruin The Little Mermaid for me. And so I'm out of here. So that was
Caitlin, it. Spoiled, there's limits, Catherine. There's limits to this.
There's such a thing as, right, there's high culture. You can't let them go to the Zurich Opera with you. That's out.
Spoiling Little Mermaid, that's just beyond the pale of acceptable right. human conduct.
I confess I love art, so what can I tell you?
Yeah, you do. Okay, let's turn to CBDC and crypto. First, the story from the IMF. The future of money gearing up for central bank digital currency. This is Chris D'Elia, the managing director. Chris D'Elia is what she is. She's just sort of a mouthpiece.
She's turbo chipper for the control grid.
She really is.
Right.
What does she have here? There's three lessons about digital currencies here. She says there is no universal, I love this language, there's no universal case for CBDCs. The case that you make, in other words, we're going to have CBDCs, period, all over the world. But the cases are different depending on where you are. So that's just that.
What she means is the operating models. The operating right. models really are different in different places.
Yeah. So in some places, your case might be, she says here, it might be financial inclusion was what you're after. But in other cases, other states, you may not want to pitch it that way. You know? Anyway, lesson number two, financial stability and privacy considerations are paramount to the design of CBDCs. Sure they are. And that brings me to lesson number three, balance. The policy aspects are also paramount, including the development of new legal frameworks, new regulations, and new case law. So that tells me that their eye is on basically making the law uniform for CBDCs because right. it has to be.
Right. Well, and that's gets me back to the Constitutional Convention and Powell saying he's going to go for authorizing legislation, because that authorizing legislation is going to be a lot easier if you tear up the Constitution. It'll be a lot easier if you get a Republican majority in the fall, but it'll get even easier if you tear up the Constitution and get rid of the Second Amendment. Right. Getting rid of the Second Amendment is going to make, you know, the CBDC. Now, one of the interesting things in the IMF paper, you know, you read these things and you pick up these little factoids that are fascinating. The one country that where the central bank has started a prototype and then stopped it and said that they were putting it on hold for now,
right,
is Canada. Interestingly enough, and we see Canada out there with the best, most effective marketing plan for private crypto, which I thought is an interesting coincidence, because a lot of the battle globally, and that's what we're going to see in the Russian story coming up, is between the private, you know, so the banks that own the Federal Reserve, you know, have got the private crypto guys under their wing. And then the Federal Reserve or the central bank has the, you know, so it's really, is the governmental or government related entity going to do the crypto and have a monopoly, or are the private guys going to dominate the market? There's a private, you know, there's a going direct to the owners versus going through the entity that has governmental obligations. So the New York Fed may be a private bank, but it has to pretend and you know, sort of give a tip of the hat to all these government public policy concerns that the private guys are free from, right?
Right. 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 Well, yeah, we'll get to that again in a minute. But first, you mentioned Russia, so let's cut to that story. This is from Blockworks. This is interesting. This is who I thought you were going to say, but you said Canada. The Russian government and the country's central bank have reached an agreement. So they acknowledge it's two different things. Russian government and the country's central bank have reached an agreement to draft legislation or amend existing laws to recognizing crypto as a form of currency, according to a statement Tuesday. The agreement is a significant reversal after the Bank of Russia last month proposed banning miners and several other crypto operations over concerns that they could endanger the country's financial system. So that's a big reversal in Russia.
Right. I can't wait to see this legislation and see what it really says.
Yeah, so, that, yeah. Because they were seemed kind of adamant about it before, and now it's like they're doing what? Just, you know, like Fast and Furious again. I mean, things are just, this is just a bewildering array of changes going along around the globe quickly.
Well, the other thing is if Russia says it's currency from a regulatory standpoint, but the United States says it's an asset.
Right. Well, hold that thought.
Right.
Because this story, I think, ties together a lot of threads that we've talked about in this show. Let's just get into it again from Blockworks. Treasury officials says stablecoin issuers must be banks to ensure security. Oh, do tell. The U.S. Treasury wants to make stablecoins the domain of banks, but not all members of Congress are on board. Only licensed banks, in the interest of consumer protection, should be allowed to issue stablecoins, according to Jean Nelly Lang, the Undersecretary of Domestic Finance at the Department of the U.S. Treasury. And there you have it. So stablecoins, basically, the exchanges, that's how you get into crypto. You go from fiat to crypto. You have to go to an exchange. Those exchanges use stable coins, and now here you have it. The Treasury is stepping in, courtesy of the Fed, saying, you know what? We should be in control of the banks.
So if those are licensed, then it means the banks control. They control who can play, and they control the on-off ramp. That's exactly what we saw in Australia.
Right. In other words, when you saw Canada restricting freedoms with the banks, and now the truckers are going to crypto, not going to do you any good if stablecoins are coming from the banks, is it? They can pull the same maneuver there.
Even if you're operating with pure private and no stablecoins, then, you know, if they control the on-off ramp, that's it.
Right. Eventually, it's at the end of the day, you've got to convert somewhere along the line. You're using fiat currency somewhere, currency that's issued by the government, right? And if they've so any alternative you have, it's got to go to that fiat at some point. And all the government has to do, all the banks have to do, is control the node that's essential, and then they've got you.
But this is all just, as far as I'm concerned, financial mechanics. The critical issue is, what are the laws, and are we going to enforce them? And what we have been dealing with for the last 30 years is wholesale, blatant violation of the law by both the government and the banks together. And the question is, are we going to enforce the law or not? Because if they're free to just make laws up and then they're free to just break them, then you are an animal farm. There is no law. There is no individual sovereignty. There's no national sovereignty. And then the only thing that has any value is what you can protect with a gun.
Well, there's no rule of law.
Right.
Because the law is whatever you say it is, whenever you say it.
Right.
That's not the rule. The rule of law has a bunch of, as we talked about in sovereignty, there are several things that come. There's a package of goods that come with the rule of law.
Right. So this is precedent. Not about, you know, digital transaction systems versus physical transaction systems, or crypto versus Visa card. None of those lines are the line. The line is, is there the rule of law or not?
Right. Right. Do you have it or don't you?
Right.
Does the law control from, you know, is it enforced? There's certain procedures. There's due process. There's all these things. There's stare decisis. There's precedent. There are all these things. There's a procedure you have to go through. Not, hey, you know what? We changed our minds, and today the rules are these. We're freezing your bank accounts. You can't do this. But we might change it tomorrow.
Right.
That's complete gangsterism.
Right.
Totally.
Right. Anyway. Right. Exactly. And that's what we talk about in sovereignty, which is why everybody should listen. I know you're listening to Money and Markets, but there's more great stuff to listen to. Okay. Keep going.
Okay. Let's go. Shifting focus over. This is interesting. Why were there so many crypto ads during Super Bowl? The NBC article here does not ever really answer. It just sort of surveys the articles of the ads that ran during the Super Bowl. So let's go to, here are the best and the worst 2022 Super Bowl tech ads, and they run through these ads. Coinbase, you know, a QR code is dancing across the screen. They rate these things. This is the article that I've linked to in the PDF that will come in the show notes. Big money is being trotted out. You can see here Larry David. You know, that's a lot of dough to hire him for an ad.
Right.
Obviously, the ad is running in the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. It's a lot of money. But you can see just from the sheer number of them that there's just a blizzard of crypto ads during the Super Bowl with a lot of money being spent on the crypto ads.
So I used to hang out with an advertising executive who said that the Super Bowl was the number one mind control programming event of the year. And to always watch the spin at the Super Bowl, you know, whether it was the midtime entertainment or the ads or any of this stuff, to understand what the sort of the brainwashing was. And one of the takeaways I get from the Super Bowl is get ready for the next big crypto pump. You know, the pump is really right. Yeah, and they pulled out the stops. It's funny, you know, so if you go back and you look at sort of the material everybody ingested as kids, you know, Harry Potter's wizards do crypto, right? Only the muggles use cash.
You're kidding.
Oh, no, you got to watch the Larry David one. It's unbelievable. You know, the founding fathers were innovative young guys who would have done crypto, and the guys for England were the guys who would use, you know, who were, you know, the old fuddy-duddies, you know, and they wouldn't have been on for the crypto thing. Oh, no, it's very clever. And it's like the other one.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah. Well, no, the founding fathers are the cool, innovative crypto guys. It's very much the Hamilton Broadway program. You got to watch it. It's great. But the other one that reminds me of, and I saw this with the injections, was the gummy bears magic potion that would let them travel at great distances. You know, it's all these memes that have been built into us since we were kids. That are, you know, the Harry Potter thing is very real in this. You got to watch it. I'm telling you, because
maybe I will. That's
if you stay
away from the Super Bowl, the NFL. You can have it.
Yeah, you're not programmable, John. but you see, you know, you have all these different things that's magic, and if you play, like you take the vaccine, you'll be magical. If you do crypto, you'll be magical. And you got to watch it. It's great. It's great.
I don't know. All right.
Apparently, the reserve, the deputy governor of the Bank of India didn't watch the Super Bowl because he just came out and said it was a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. He says worse than a Ponzi scheme.
Yep.
He says it's as bad or maybe worse than a Ponzi scheme.
Yep.
Anyway, let's go to pushback. This first video is just brilliant. Let's get it started.
Over the past few days, Canadians were shocked and frankly disgusted by the behavior displayed by some people protesting in our nation's capital. Hate can never be the answer. I want to be very clear. We are not intimidated by those who hurl insults and abuse at small business workers and steal food from the homeless. We won't give in to those who fly racist flags. We won't cave to those who engage in vandalism or dishonor the memory of our veterans. Tous les Canadiens ont le droit d'exprimer leur opinion ou leur désaccord avec leur gouvernement, mais ils n'ont pas le droit de menacer ou de harceler leurs concitoyens ni de propager des messages de haine. There is no place in our country for threats, violence, or hatred. So to those responsible for this behavior, it needs to stop. To anyone who joined the convoy but is rightly uncomfortable with the symbols of hatred and division on display, join with your fellow Canadians. Be courageous and speak out. Do not stand for or with intolerance and hate. And to Canadians at home, watching in disgust and disbelief at this behavior, wondering how this could have happened in our nation's capital after everything we've been through, the behavior on display this weekend does not represent you. Hateful rhetoric, abuse towards their fellow citizens, there's always a right to protest peacefully, that I and others will defend.
Yeah, okay. There's always a right until I say there's no longer a right. Until we cut off your bank account and freeze all your money, take your house, steal your business, you know.
Yeah.
It's all, you always have a right to protest. But that video is great.
I love Trudeau because he makes things so clear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's clear. The one thing that's clear is that he's never been anywhere near that protest.
Right. It's like it's the productive versus the unproductive, right? Right.
Yep. It is. Okay. Yep. More on pushback. This is just straight up Twitter. Look at this photograph. I'll zoom
that's
in.
It's unbelievable.
Oh,
if
my
you know
God,
Australia, it's unbelievable.
This is Northbourne Avenue right now. Watch out, Parliament House, and look at that shot. Wow.
So here's the thing. I have to tell you, if I was a Canadian politician on the wrong side of this or a Australian politician, I'd be terrified.
Yeah.
I'd be terrified because, you know, everybody knows.
You know, you could tell those cars. I'm going to cut back to this shot. You can tell those cars are still because they're so close together. That's not a shot of traffic.
Right. Right?
They're way too close together. But the one thing this emphasizes is that, you know, the power of these protests with the truckers that I haven't heard anybody talk about is, yeah, you got to, when it's you on foot versus the police, you know, they can leverage their numbers, right? It's like 10 guys can take on 100. But when it's cars, it's more like 1-to-1, isn't it? And we way outnumber them. And I think that's why you're seeing, because if people pick up on that, like, wait a minute, we can have a protest. Like 100 people could be a real protest.
You only see the pictures coming in from networks and friends. The convoys have been happening all over the world. They're everywhere. Everywhere.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right. France picked up on it right away. I think some in Australia. I don't know where else, but for sure that's.
Well, you're seeing mandates roll back over all around the world, and we're just about to put up a new cartoon. And it's a whole crowd of people saying no mandates, no mask mandates, no vax mandates, and one guy holding up a big sign saying no control grid. Because while all these mandates are rolling back, the control grid keeps coming, and that's what Canada has made clear.
Right. And so you wonder, you know, if these mandates might be rolling back sort of preemptively, is a preemptive strike against protests against the entire country.
I think so. But what's been gratifying is I think there is far more appreciation of the dangers of the control grid and a lot more anger about it.
Yeah,
so,
I think that's right.
Right. And that the anger of people who got the first two shots and now are being told they have to take the booster, you know, they're translating that not into just I want the vaccine mandates to stop, but, you know, something I want corrupt government to stop. I don't trust you on anything.
Yeah, right.
That was a big lie.
Right. Yeah, you guys told us 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and here we are.
Right.
And you're telling me now, fourth booster.
Right, right.
Yeah, okay. The last story we have this week in pushback is just from Zero Hedge, QR code, never again. Police fire tear gas at demonstrators as Freedom Convoy enters Paris. Here you go. Chaos ensues in Paris. So, yeah, here they picked it up on it. Demonstrators in central Paris have so far been peaceful. People wave French and Canadian flags and chanted QR code, never again, freedom, no to the vaccine pass. And here you got this tweet. A group of Convoy for Freedom has made it through and is blocking the Champs-Élysées. Is how you pronounce that? In Paris.
Champs-Élysées.
Okay.
Now, this is amazing, you know, because there's a lot more sensitivity to the QR passes, vaccine passports. They call them green passports in Italy, in Europe. And I'm wondering if that didn't happen because when they came together in the EU, what they promised everybody was free travel within the Schengen area. And now they're reneging on free travel in the Schengen area. And so it's a real, they're very sensitive to it.
Wow.
Right.
That's
great.
But the protests... it is great. They're picking up around the world. The one place they're not picking up, though, the good old US of A is sort of the laggard.
Well, the Canadian truckers picked up on the QR code, so that was good. What we saw in Europe was there was a real serious pushback. They were going to go ahead in the EU Parliament with vaccine passports, and then suddenly the EU president comes out at the end of January and says, oh, vaccine, not vaccine, digital ID wallets. They completely remorphed the packaging and marketing of it because the passports were dead. Yeah.
Passports are dead.
Yeah.
You're right. They're gonna repackage the marketing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's go to charts. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, here we go.
What's the first one?
It's
get inflation. Does inflation look like 7.5% to you?
No, it does
not.
Boy.
No.
Where is lumber this week? I didn't check.
Oats and coffee are still at the top.
Yeah, and so lumber is gas.
Lumber's 31%.
There's lumber. Good old lumber moving around. But yeah, that's the other than that, it's the same chart. So lumber, and where's the VIX now?
I can't find the VIX. Where is it?
It's way up here. Wow, what's going
on? Wow. Wow, a world of risk.
Yeah, imagine.
Did the Fed put come off?
I don't know what's going on there. Something's going on. The VIX for weeks and months has been down here, and all of a sudden, bam, it's in the top half.
Yeah.
That's incredible. But
yep, that is incredible.
The takeaway here, though, is inflation ain't going anywhere anytime soon.
Right.
Okay. Keep it going. Next chart. Here we go.
So which one is this? You got emerging markets. So EEM is the emerging markets ETF, the largest emerging markets ETF. And what you see is, and what we did was we did this since the vote for going direct in August 2019. So the emerging markets are up 31%. The frontier markets almost matching them, up 32%. Europe up a little bit more, 36%, and then the S&P up 52%. And there's no doubt in my mind that one of the things the going direct did was make sure the U.S. markets stayed ahead, because they'd so out-traded Europe in the emerging markets for the period before then. You know, they were very much long in the tooth, and they, you know, they gave new energy to the S&P and the U.S. markets. So U.S. markets, you know, that's a pretty respectable performance from an investment standpoint when you have no yield on the fixed income world and bank deposits. So the S&P still in the lead, Europe coming in behind, but the emerging markets and frontier markets behind that, and they're coming down. So China has come off in the last year, or really since last fall, and the markets have been under real pressure. So we see, if you look at the chart, we see real drops from September and October last year. You know, so the market very much was much stronger as of the coming into the fall in 2021.
Yeah, and with the market in the U.S., keep in mind the Fed printed more money, both wholesale and retail money, to keep that market propped up the way you see above as the leader of the pack.
Right.
That's, you know, there's more money printing.
Right.
Okay. Next chart. This is Pfizer on down.
Yeah. So as I said, we talked about Moderna last week, but it's still coming off the high last fall. Moderna's down 63% from the fall high.
Wow.
And what that says to me is, if you look at what Dowd was talking about the information coming out both on the withholding of trial information and the effort to get the FDA to keep things secret for 75 years, and then the pathology reports, somebody, investors are scared about the truth coming out on the injection, what I call the injection fraud. Then we see, we also ran the Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson.
Right.
So Pfizer and Johnson really, Pfizer a little bit ahead of the S&P for the period. The S&P down 1.42% for the period. Johnson & Johnson down almost 4%. We know Johnson & Johnson last week, we talked about it last week, is pulled out of the COVID-19 injection market. So what this says to me, John, is that I think there's real concern in the halls of the insurance companies about what's going on, whether it's as an E&O insurer or a life insurer or a corporate liability insurer. I think the insurance industry and the attorneys are now pushing their way in and telling, you know, the CEO of Moderna to shut down his Twitter account and shut up.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Last chart we got here.
TNX, right. So just wanted to take a look at the dollar. And what you see here is that's the intermediate. So we're looking at some of the futures ETFs on interest rates. So TNF is the intermediate bond, and then TYX is the long bond. And so basically that just says interest rates are going up, but the dollar continues to hold, you know, so it's up 3.71%. This is from last August. You know, so we're just looking at that fall period when the market started to drop. And so part of the simple story is, you know, when interest rates rise, it puts pressure on the stock market and the bubbles. And so what this says to me is the dollar's holding, interest rates are rising, but it's causing the market to trade off as one of the contributing factors. And as everybody looks at the inflation chart, they're saying, uh-oh, you know, are the bubbles going to burst?
Yeah, are the bubbles going to burst is the question of the hour.
Right, because the driver in the market is corporate profits. And you just showed that producer price index. If you're the corporations and you're the cost of goods is going up by 20 to 50%, how are you going to translate that into reengineerings that don't affect corporate profits?
Yeah. I was alerted to that chart, by the way, by Denninger.
Right.
On market, yeah, market-ticker.org. Yeah. He's like, yeah, check out that chart. And I was like, or check out the intermediate table. You know, Carl kind of has, sometimes he can write in a very abbreviated way.
Right.
And I'm just like, what is he talking about? I scroll through. I'm like, oh my God, look at that.
I hadn't seen the 50%. That was.
On the unfinished goods sides of that table.
Right.
On the right
that
side
was
of
stunning.
That table.
Right. That was stunning.
Like, whoa.
Right.
Okay. That's it for the charts.
So a couple of comments. One, we continue to get a lot of subscribers switching to cash and coin. And I love that because PayPal just updated their terms and conditions again. We've been looking at doing another payment gateway. They're out of Canada. Anyway, so if you can pick up 3 months extra for free on your subscription if you convert to cash and coin. So I want to encourage you to come in and do that because the more independent we can be, the better. But I want to thank everybody because that is going well, and we continue to do conversions. The Doctors for COVID Ethics Symposium is Friday night. It's a doozy. It's going to be really great. It's with UK Column, and we'll have links to it from our website, but you can pick it up on UK Column. And it's going to have Dr. Mark Skidmore's new COVID-19 survey, which I think, along with the pathology reports, it's a total blockbuster. And then if you listen to it, you want to understand what's really going on, you just have to listen to our other publication this Thursday evening, which is your interview on sovereignty. And we're going to start putting the draft up on the web presentation, but we'll have that at some point. That'll roll into a new hard copy.
Let me tell your subscribers, the presentation to compress down the material, which I've been collecting for 10 years, to be blunt, took a lot out of me. So it'll go up Thursday night. But it's going to be a work in progress. I told you, I could turn this into a book, no problem at all.
Right, and I told him we'll publish it if he'll do it. So.
Yeah. So there's sections to be added and stuff, but I'm hoping I can get this. I want to be done with it by the weekend.
You know, listen to the interview because it's a great introduction. And this is the issue. There are no shortcuts. Crypto's not a shortcut. Gold standard's not a shortcut. Moving to an island is not a shortcut. This, you know, the rule of law, that's the issue. Are we going to have law or not? Are we going to be a civilization of humans or machines? This is it.
I like that phrase. Your phraseology is exactly right. There are no shortcuts. You can't sit on your couch and expect things to change. You got to make changes yourself.
Right. But you can't. There's no way around the absence of the rule of law. It has to be dealt with at the core. Right.
Big problem.
Right. So that's what we do, John. Whenever we want to talk about the big problems, we come to you.
Good to know. Scary.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful week. And we will talk to you not next week. No Money in Markets next week. The following week, first week of March, we'll be back because I'm sure Fast and Furious is going to continue.
Boy, we had a story spreadsheet. I shudder to think about the size of that thing.
I'll try to be good.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, have a great evening. John, thank you. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you. See ya.